The Mets have won two in a row, the bats have shown signs of life, and naturally Colorado had to call in a blizzard to cool them off.
Welcome to episode 102 of Mets on Tap, a drinking podcast from BarleyPros.com, talking about the New York Mets. Pour yourself a beer, grab a spot in the bleachers, and have a chat with us. I'm Michael, here today with Jason. Hey, Jason. It's been a couple weeks, but I don't think the Mets won a game since we last talked, so it's okay.
We were saving these bullets for when they were actually a bearable team to watch. And so for the better part of the last couple weeks, that hasn't been the case. Now, finally, we turn the calendar from April to May, and all of a sudden, they've become a little bit more watchable, haven't they?
Snuck in two in a row. I mean,
three out of four.
What could you ask for?
You know, they've gone out on the road. They took two out of three from Anaheim. They took the opener against a Colorado team that really humbled them in New York when they were there not that long ago. So that's a good sign too. And it turns out that if you have nine guys hitting every day, that if you could even get, say, three of them hot at once, you can win some baseball games. And that really have not been the case almost the entire season, which is why they've lost so much. But they're stirring a little bit. They're showing some signs of life.
Yeah. I mean, they're back up to 500 or so. If you go back, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4 through like April 26th.
Well, there you go.
That's almost a week and a half. I mean,
you know, when you consider that they've had,
actually, you could go all the way back to the 22nd. I'm wrong, because they had those two wins against Minnesota. So that's a solid 2 weeks of 500 baseball.
Lindor and Soto together have played almost no baseball this year because Lindor got hurt literally the day that Soto came back. So there's that. And let's not discount the fact that that's their two best baseball players, and they've not had them in the same lineup yet this year, really, to speak of. So everything else comes as a side order. That, I mean, the pitching has been, starting pitching has been mostly good. The front end of it, at least, you know, like a lot of teams, you have some questions on the back half of your rotation, but there's been some good signs in the bullpen. There's been some good signs of the plate guys like Vientos and Bench, who are both looking a little more comfortable, a little more into the groove here now that we're in May.
Yeah, so we say there's some signs of life. I think Carson Bench is where you look. He's the last 7 days or so, he's got 24 plate appearances. He has a home run. He's four RBIs. He's been walking. He's got a .919 WRC plus. He plays good defense. He's got a good arm. You know, he's got a great arm, really.
He's made a couple of exceptional defensive plays in this past few games here. It's been fun to watch. And MJ Melendez in left field has also played some good defense and had a few clutch hits here and there. And so he's your dark horse, right? He's the guy, I think, people were least likely to have been counting on for any kind of help or production this year, and like a lot of guys thrust into a bigger role because Polanco's out and because Luis Robert Jr.'s out. So you know, the other guys are going to get opportunities to play. It's too bad, honestly, that Ronnie Mauricio didn't learn the same thing my dad taught me as my very first Little League coach in 1981 when I was eight, when he said, "Don't talk to first base." And I said, "Okay, Dad, I won't, I promise." And I never did. And Ronnie Mauricio never had a coach. And so guess
apparently,
what?
Apparently.
And then broke his thumb. I mean, I almost get it on a play like the play where it happened, because he's trying to not get tagged. But he certainly had options besides lunging out and going thumb first into the base.
Yeah, you got to run. You got to run. That's so rough.
This was his opportunity, really, to get some everyday reps for several weeks in the position I think he's most natural at defensively. You know, hit him at the bottom of the order where there's less pressure on him, to hit him eighth or ninth and give him a chance to play and see what he can do while Lindor recuperates. And now he's going to spend that time on the pine. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, the Mets still need a couple more hitters, and you know, Lindor's not going to be back till, I think, the conservative estimate seems to be mid-June, I guess. Okay. Which, so I was looking at the schedule, depending on how that works, and Lindor seems to have been a guy that comes back maybe on time or a week or so early. He seems like I don't know if it's
comes back at a subpar level like he did for opening day, and clearly he could have used two extra weeks of practice games to get
right. Yeah, and the Mets have been guilty of some of that, pushing that stuff too early too. So I'm worried about where it's going to come and how desperate they are mid June to.
Well, they're paying him a lot of money, and he's a fan draw. And they want him in the lineup, and they want to be able to say that he's in the lineup, even if it means he's got to work the kinks out at the major league level. Look, there's nobody who would enjoy more a Francisco Lindor AAA rehab stint. Trust me on that. That would be a high point of maybe any time I've spent watching minor league baseball where I live, but I don't see it happening though. He will.
I don't see a long rehab stint happening, but it's the starting of the rehab stint is where I would worry. And the Mets have done this a couple times with a couple players where they just sort of like, oh, well, we need you here. We're just going to do it.
Kodai Senga coming in to pitch in playoff games 2 years ago.
Yeah. And then it was last year with, Winker,
mm-hmm.
They just shoved him out of left field all of a sudden. Like, hey, you know what? We need you left field. And then he hurt himself throwing a ball. So, maybe that wasn't, maybe you need more prep there. And then, there's a couple of that.
Did he ever get signed anywhere? Is he even playing baseball this year, like Major League Baseball?
I hope so. He must be, right? He was such a good player. Like, he was
good 2 years ago. He was very, very not that.
He didn't get any reps last year, I don't think. He was just ended up being injured. But for the most part,
no.
He's listed as nobody. Yeah, he's not listed as really anybody. Is he in the minors anywhere?
Yeah, if you do a Google search for him, he's a free agent. Apparently, he didn't get picked up anywhere.
It's weird. It's like, I mean, even last year he was like league average in his 81 plate appearances. Sort of spits starts, but like he can play. He can play outfield a little bit. Like he's not terrible.
He's coming off of a hurt year, and for all we know, he's a guy who only insisted on taking a major league offer and never got one, and decided to stay home and count his money.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Yeah, so, I mean, the Mets need... I mean, Melendez has been... You got to win these games, I guess. But if Vientos can hit... Beatty's been up and down, and he did that last year, too. He ended up with good numbers overall, but, he hasn't shown... He has shown a couple of flashes. Yeah, the last
Alvarez
seven...
Too. They're such streaky hitters. They really are.
Alvarez has been... I feel like Alvarez has been better, but just looking at the split of the last seven, he hasn't been, so, like... At least Beatty's been walking. He's a handful of walks the last couple of weeks, even if he's not crushing the ball. But Alvarez has done nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Some of these bats have gotten quiet, and they're just a team with a lot of streaky hitters. They're just guys who run hot and cold. And I think almost everyone in that lineup is guilty. Yeah. I mean, that's just a baseball thing, right? You have hotter stretches and colder stretches too. But it seems like I think the issue is too many guys having cold stretches simultaneously. You can't have a team where eight of your guys are all 0 for their last 19. You don't win many baseball games that way.
Like, you sort of regret the push for Benj early and you're trading Nimmo. And this is the thing. I've been killing Semien since before they traded him, basically.
Yeah.
And it was the wrong move. And he hasn't shown the ability to do anything out there. And so not only did they trade a productive hitter in Nimmo for Semien, that trade was the decision to start Carson Benj in the outfield and give him everyday playing time. And, he's struggling in April and maybe it'll work out. Those reps will work out for the rest of the season. He'll come through. It'll be a 2015 Michael Conforto where he like really helps the team, win down the road. But like, it's rough. They dug a big hole because of that decision.
They dug a big hole, but I wonder if in the long term, if the fact that they're playing out of a hole that they dug for themselves ends up being a helpful, beneficial thing in the long run, because it puts the team in a position where they can give more rope to these guys. They're not fighting for a playoff spot. And if Carson Benj or one of these other guys that you're trying to figure out a book on needs an opportunity to play every day for 3-4 months, like, we should know at the rate that they're giving him starts every day, we should know by, midsummer, what we have in Carson Benj, right? And it's nice that I would rather they were in first place and winning and all of the guys clicking. But if you have to look for the silver linings, then that's, life as a Mets fan, right?
Yeah, I guess it just happens. It's
early for that.
It's tough. It's early for that. But like, I think Bo Bichette getting off to a slow start has been, I mean, you thought it was going to be okay with Soto and with Lindor and like enough hitters that like, Bichette, he's a quality hitter. Like, he's going to hit, but like, it's not the first time people have come into a new team and struggled to start in New York with the Mets, particularly so that it happened.
The Beltran effect, right? Lindor had a bumpy first year too. And not only that, you take the additional the additional burden on Bichette of having to learn a new defensive position. He never played third in the majors before this year either.
Right,
so
exactly.
He had that on top of doing. New York's a bigger market than Toronto, so he's got more eyeballs on him and more pressure on him, and a team that maybe had higher expectations. Obviously Toronto overachieved last year. But you know, you come into New York and you're expected to be a key piece of the lineup, and then the guys around you are either hurt or terrible, and then you start to press, right? I mean, they're all just pressing. That's obviously why they sucks so much so often.
the silver lining to that is that all those guys, Beltran, Lindor, or whatever, like they had a first bad month or month and a half, and then if you look at their numbers the rest of the way, they were as good or better than they usually were.
The numbers just were down for the season because it took
them so long the early start, right? So if the shit comes out and he's crushing the ball the next 4 months, it will work out. And the other thing about back to my mid-June point with Lindor is that's when the Mets start playing Atlanta and Philadelphia. They haven't done that yet. So that, like, the silver lining of their slow start is that, well, Philadelphia sucked as well. One of the teams also expected to take one of those playoff spots they'd be competing for. So because they're right there too, that's just like, the whole, you don't have to outrun the Bear. You have to outrun your friend that's slower than you. So if the Phillies are that other guy.
No, I agree. And not only that too, it's funny because this is maybe in the last 20, 25 years, this is about as detached as I've been from a Met season this early. And part of it also is they've had so many games on the West Coast and so many late games. And I'm just not a late person. I'm in bed reading a book at 9:30 p.m. And so a game that starts at 9:30, 10 o'clock, I'm getting maybe an inning in. I'm not saying that. So they were bad and they're playing late. And it's easy for me to go, oh, I checked the score in the morning. They not only did they lose, but there aren't many highlights for me to look at. I'm going to just move on to the next day and the next thing. Yeah. And so if they want to heat up right around the same time they start playing a bunch of East Coast games, I'm okay with that too.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched some of them because my schedule has worked out. But yeah, there's some truth to that. They've not played well. They're not expiring. You're not inspiring to watch, and you don't have this attachment to them yet. Like, there's a lot of new guys. They're like, okay, you might have like a fantasy, like, oh, I think, but fantasy lineup type of thing. Like, oh, I picked up Carson Bench. I like him. Whatever, he's a prospect. All right, I like Brett Beatty, but like, well, Brett Beatty's been there, but like, Bichette or pick your guy. Or Semien, which I don't know why you'd pick up Marcus Semien, regardless. Even if you thought he was going to be good, he wasn't going to be fantasy good. But my point is, like, you might be invested in these guys, but you're not, like, invested in, I'm going to stay up and screw up my sleep invested yet, because they haven't shown you anything to give them that. So, yeah, once they get, summer comes, you settle in, you start getting attached, maybe they actually rattle off a, if it stops snowing in Denver, maybe they get some games in.
Are you not buying a Marcus Semien t-shirt with his number on the back when you go to the game this summer? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I'll buy one for $4 in 2029 when that's the only thing. They got 400 of them in the shop. I'm trying to remember who it was. Back when I worked in the city and they still had the Mets team store in the city, and you occasionally have like the player use it. I think they have a city field too. Like, and you would go to the rack of like old players that have retired. It was just, I can't remember who it was now.
I remember.
It might have been Kaz Matsui. I don't even know, but there was one that was there for, there was like, they had like 10 of them, and they had them like 10 years after this guy retired because just nobody wanted it.
We saw very cheap Noah Syndergaard t-shirts. I don't remember if it was at Citi Field or if it was at some sporting goods store, and I was like, not only is he not on the Mets, but he kind of burnt bridges on the way out too and was kind of shitty about it. So it's like,
he burnt bridges everywhere.
Not wearing the Syndergaard. Yeah, and he never even, like, when he was in Philly and he refused to pitch against the Mets because he didn't want to hear from the Mets fans, right?
I think that might have been okay. I don't even remember now. Like, I feel like maybe that was okay. They were arresting him or whatever. He's come out and said some nasty stuff publicly, too. I think he was just in the news today for being on, like, Fox News for mouthing off about nonsense. So.
Is that right? I haven't thought about the guy. But the other thing that
I hadn't either, and I just saw him today with, like, a balding head and, like, his hair is receding.
The people who took all of his old jerseys and T-shirts and they taped over some of the letters so it said Senga, because Senga was wearing the same number that he wore. Right. So I thought that was pretty great too.
Yeah.
Use at this point of a Syndergaard jersey or t-shirt. Unless you're waxing your car with it.
I have one of those stupid like Halloween ghosts that I bought at like Spirit where it goes back and forth on the line and makes noise. I think a couple years ago, I left it up and then, for whatever reason, and I put a little like Mets shirt on it so that it would go. I turned the silly ghost sounds off, and I had it going back and forth with the Mets jersey on it. You can get an old like dirty crappy Syndergaard or something for that.
It's funny because my kids they both wore plenty of t-shirts, and that was the thing. We would take them to the ballpark and they could pick out a player t-shirt, Nate and my son specifically like that. But then like they would outgrow them, he would give them to my daughter, she would outgrow them, And then my wife would give them to my niece, who my niece is 11, and so like my niece is wearing like a Johann Santana shirt like 2 years ago, which is pretty funny to me. Like she's wearing these old timey Mets shirts. Yeah, that were originally my son's, but it, you know, when he was, you know, from 10 years back or whatever it was. So the shirts keep on going. There you go.
I think I have to check. I think I have a like a J Payton in this just from way from like 25 years ago. That just like nice. I don't fit it into it anymore because it was 25 years ago. I was literally a teenager, but like I feel like I don't know
I have a David Wright tee. That's my oldest one. I think that's got a name on the back. And for whatever reason, I got a large, so it still fits me. I also have a Beltran jersey that was like a super. I think it's a knockoff, but it says Beltran 15 on the back and. And it's like the pinstripe, so it's a pretty slick look. I like the pinstripe jersey.
I mean, the Beltran's the, you know, classic. And they're retiring his number and everything. So he's classic forever, which I guess maybe we didn't talk about. I've been advocating them retiring 15 since basically he retired because he's been great. He was great for the Mets. He was a great player.
He was an all-time great Met. I couldn't agree more. And he was so
I mean,
much
I would
fun
love,
to watch.
I would have loved to have, he was fun to watch. I would have loved like another season and an actual championship, but like he was one of the best Mets ever. So I.
Yeah, no, 100%. It was in terms of all around players. Was he the best outfielder the Mets ever had?
Probably. I think he might be the best like in the game. He was the best outfielder of the time. Like he was the best center fielder. He was the best outfielder that existed in Major League Baseball at that time. Like he was number one.
Well, I mean, he's playing with Bonds. He was playing in the same time as Bonds and Ken Griffey.
Well, I mean, all around, like factoring in the whole package, the five tools and the
Certainly was a five tools guy, and the Mets got him at his prime, you know, they got him at his prime earning years and got several awesome seasons. It was just fun to watch, go get everything, and he'd hit for power and steal. And I loved him, loved watching him the same way that Lindor, watching these guys. And and he warmed to being a Met, you know, he had that obviously that bumpy first year, but he ultimately was very much, you know, I identify with him as a Met, and obviously because he's going to go into Cooperstown as a Met, then that he identifies that way himself as well.
Yeah. You know, they decided coming back from Colorado that he was the manager and Mendez was a.
Wouldn't that be funny if that happened? You know, like at some point you have to think that the stigma from the whole cheating gate Houston thing that just kind of fades into the past and that to the point where because he never was he the manager on paper for 2 months in the winter before that all broke.
I think it was like a week. I mean,
was it only that long? Yeah, so
it wasn't that long.
Obviously, and he never managed any major league team. Like he never got a shot. No. Now, I would love to see the Mets. I'm not particularly upset with Mendoza. I think in terms of Mendoza, the one thing I would say is I do question some of the late inning substitution in the bullpen choices. But that's true for any manager when your team
is true for any manager. But,
you know, Mendoza's not the one grounded into double plays and leaving guys at third. He's not. And then
it's Marcus Semien, but.
There you're ringing that bell again, but like you can't fault Mendoza for guys who don't hit. Like that's not that you can't even fault the hitting coach. The hitters, but they should hit the ball. They're hitters.
Firing Mendoza is not going to solve the problems, but I haven't been particularly enamored of him. I was on the fence for a while and just like I haven't found anything I like about him. Like say, actually he seems to be handling that well. He just doesn't like I don't think they lose anything. Yeah, so if they had to make a rule, even just for the sake of appearances, like, what is he going for you? If you want Carlos Beltran, I mean, he's in the organization. I feel like that's sort of – it's almost being hinted at, right? Like, he's just hanging around in the organization for what reason? Like, he clearly wants to manage. He's hoping – I feel like he's standing there waiting for the Mets to offer him the job.
I still wonder what Edgardo Alfonso did to fall out of favor. Now, not only was he an all-time great Met, but unlike Beltran – had some minor league managerial experience, didn't he? Win an
won
title with the Cyclones.
Not that necessarily means anything, but
managing. He's managing a team to a championship. At some point, I get that it's A ball, but if you operate under the assumption that all of the players who are playing in the A ball league are within some extent comparable to each other, then they're it's a fairly balanced competitive league of baseball.
I don't know if it is or not, but no, yeah, again, that does, but that's not the point, right? He they didn't collapse on him. He put the right moves. He wasn't like putting in the closer.
Job, and they never gave him anything. He shows up in spring training and he's smiling and he does the things
to
Meredith. That's got to be the greatest thing ever, right? Like you're an all-time Met. You just come back at Port St. Lucie and it's sunny out and you give guys tips on how to square up or whatever. You get some
they give you $50,000 for it or whatever.
And you talk to Gelbs and you sign autographs at the clubhouse and you get a big fat check and then you go back to whatever you were doing. I would love that kind of work. That sounds fantastic.
I mean, some people just vanish into the distance, or like Brad Lidge, who becomes an archaeologist. But
did he?
Yeah. Brad Lidge is literally getting his master's degree. He's an archaeologist. Yep.
Cool.
But but it seems fun. You know, just show up, hang out. But I don't understand. Yeah, I agree. Like, I assume it was money. I assume they wanted somebody with certain pedigree, and he wanted a job here. And they're like, well, we don't really, you know, we have other plans here. And like, well, and so it just didn't work out. Like, I almost feel like maybe it was because he was so successful. He's like, okay, what's the next step? How do I grow in my career? And the Mets were like, well, we've got other plans, and there's nowhere to put you. And if we feel like you're stuck here, well, I guess
what you
want to
do. Yeah, what you want to do is sit at home for 10 years and wait for us to call you, and then that'll be the next step in your career. Were you sad to hear about the passing of John Sterling?
Yeah, a little bit. Sterling grew on me over the years, as I guess less angrily, like less dialed into that like WFAN of like the stupid Yankees and like everything's a rivalry and you have to be mad about it because it's a hot take. Like, he wasn't a great announcer from a balls and strikes standpoint, but he was entertaining. He cared about, like, so much to me as I've gotten older. It's been like, does this guy care about baseball? Is he like a baseball fan? Like, you can see, you talk to some of these guys
detached, like the Daniel Murphy, right? Like full detachment. Like,
Daniel Murphy, maybe. I'm still on the fence about Daniel Murphy, but I mean, like, some of these,
so even bland. He seems so unenthusiastic about the fact that he's broadcasting a ball game. At least Todd
sometimes, I don't like Zeal either, though. But like, I've caught some things from Murphy where I'm okay, but like, when you talk to some of these guys, like, even like the ESPN talking heads and all of that, they'll talk about baseball, and like, even guys that seem like, you know, it just don't seem like they necessarily love it, and it's just like, oh, we're just churning content. Oh, it's like, time to talk about this.
You never accuse John Sterling of that.
And John Sterling loved baseball, and I'm good with that. The same with Scott Boras. Like, I heard an interview with him, and like, you know, he's got this whole like lawyer thing and agent, and like, you know, cutthroat. I'm getting every last dollar, but he genuinely cares about the sport and loves baseball. And like, to me, okay, fine. Like, you care about the sport and you want to make it better. Like, for me, that's most of it. Like, okay, that's fine. I like you. You're good. You want baseball to happen? That's fine.
You know, to me, the least forgivable thing about John Sterling is that he was a Yankees fan, which I
would have been
every Yankee fan of that category. But like, he very much became a caricature of himself. Like, he ended up doing a John Sterling impression every day as John Sterling. Yeah. And I actually thought that was better. Like,
He leaned in.
Seriously. Lean into the shtick.
He leaned into it, yeah.
Like, it's his shtick. He's John Sterling, and he's going to do the John Sterling bit because he's John Sterling, and like, run with it. Buy into it. So I actually kind of respect that. And over the years, and you know, I have historically, for you know, our friends who listen, who are also former Crane Pool forum posters, you know, I've clearly given him the business many times over the years, but over time, and now here's the other thing too that helps me to appreciate him. I spent very little time, like cumulative minutes, actually listening to him call ball games. What am I going to listen to, a Yankees game? I'm not, like, you know, I catch a highlight of him calling a specific or a play on the, you know, the ESPN wrap the next day or whatever. So
back in the day when it was less like everything was on the internet, like when I would be driving a car and I wasn't like connected to whatever I wanted to listen to, and it's just the radio, and I would listen to whatever. It's like, the Mets are off, the Yankees are on, I'll listen to a baseball game.
The Mets are on the West Coast, and it's 7:30, and that's the game on the AM, so you're listening. No, I definitely can relate to that.
And I would play the game like, okay, I just turned this Yankee game on, John Sterling's having some fun, but is he going to tell me what the score of this game is before I get to where I'm going? Which was often not, but you know.
There was a broadcaster in the 50s, maybe it was Red Barber, I don't know, but kept a 3-minute egg timer on the table right next to where he did radio calls and flipped it over. And every 3 minutes when the timer ran out, he told everyone who was listening what the inning was and what the score was and what the outs were and what the count was. Every 3 minutes for the entire broadcast.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, there's some stuff.
Like, have a system.
That's good broadcasting. Yeah.
And radio guys have to do a little more. They have to try a little harder than the TV guys do.
Yeah, that's for sure. So what are you drinking?
I'm drinking, I bought myself this week a Southern Tier IPA variety pack, and I don't think I have to tell you how much I enjoy anything that includes the phrase IPA variety pack. It's May, I'm rooting for summer. So this is the Southern Tier variety pack, and I'm having a Lakeshore Fog. It is their hazy, juicy IPA. It's a 6.5%, and it is very cloudy and yellow, the way a hazy IPA is supposed to be. And it's delicious, actually. It's quite good. Nice and light. I'm last one of the day, so want one that's not a little too dense. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. What are you working on today, Mike?
So, since it's Cinco de Mayo and you guys were talking about that before we got on, I am opening, I have a Firestone Walker Tequila Barrel Sunrise from 2021.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's
You
it's
getting the
intense actually.
you
So
get
it's a
tequila
tequila.
vibe from it?
Oh, definitely. It's a tequila
All right.
barrel aged ale brewed with orange peel and hibiscus. And you can still kind of get some of that orange, like you sort of get that triple sec scent
Yeah.
to it, especially since it's 5 years old. And
Oh, did you find this one in the back of the fridge?
yeah, it's just like sometimes, well, it's 11%, and sometimes these Firestone Walkers are like one-off special beers. So some I'm always like, am I just gonna drink this at a random like 9 o'clock watching a stupid
No,
Angel
I have a
Mets
couple
Angels
of
game?
I
So
have a
I put
couple
them
of
in the
10,
back,
11
like.
percenters in my basement fridge too that are just waiting for like the right like it's I get it actually. It's hard to necessarily
it's
find the right moment for that beer.
right, but it's you know, it tends to got that like nice like agave like cut to it, that tequila taste to it, under the undertone of it, with a little bit of, you know, sickly sweetness, not sickly sweet, but like, you know, orange peel and hibiscus, and it's got a nice like cane sugar, like 11%. This is a strong beer. You can taste it as a strong beer, not alcohol, but like that heavy like Belgian-y style beer. And it's actually really good, even 5 years old. Maybe this is a sweet spot. I don't know what it tasted like fresh. I don't know if I've had one of these fresh or not, but
Interesting.
yeah,
I
Firestone
thought
Walker
that.
makes good beers. And I actually went out there once, who knows, 15 years ago now. But
Where are they
they have it's a
located?
cool place, way out of California, outside
Oh,
of
okay.
well, we were in Solvang, so right outside, not right outside LA, but like west of LA.
Gotcha.
Yeah, good stuff.
What's body drinking?
Tonight I'm drinking Postponed in the Powder, a Colorado-style cold IPA. It's crisp, a little piney, and has this weird frosty bitterness, kind of like checking the schedule and realizing the Mets' tiny two-game heater just got buried under 6 inches of Denver nonsense. I picked it up after allegedly challenging a snowplow to a foot race outside Coors Field. I lost, but the plow respected my hustle.
Very nice. So, what is a Colorado style
You're
cold IPA? Is that
quiet
it?
again. No mic. Yeah, so I guess
No.
body's traveling with the team. This saves the probably as body
Yeah,
doesn't mind the cold.
she's on the road, I guess.
Yeah. Why
I
not? Go with the flow.
didn't know Colorado style IPA was a thing. That's not West Coast? That's a different? Is that a made up style?
It's probably a made up style, but cold IPA is sort of a thing.
Like it's
It's
cold
kind of a
brewed?
thing.
That sounds kind of familiar to me. I don't know
It
that I know.
is, but it's not like a real thing. It's like cold. I can't even remember what it means now, but it's sort of the way that they hop the cold. It's sort of where they hop the hops,
I'm nearly
sort of
certain I've
cold
drank a
additions.
cold IPA and I just
Yeah,
thought
you wouldn't notice the difference
it's just
probably.
beer. Right, exactly.
It's a little bit. Yeah, it's hoppy. It's just a differently hoppy. But
Gotcha.
yeah, frosty bitters. I'll take it. Yeah, it's
So what
wild
are
that
we?
it's snowing, but.
Yeah, it's pretty goofy. What are we looking forward to on the schedule? So the Mets are in Colorado. They come home after that, or they have some East Coast road games?
They go into Arizona, yeah.
Oh, they have more West Coast? God, man,
No,
and then
in this strip though, I think they're done after this, right? This oh no,
they
they have still
must be.
Seattle.
They've spent a
No,
ton of time out there.
they have Seattle and San Diego coming in June. But
Fair enough.
yeah, they're gonna go to
Well, they'll be
Arizona
home
after
a
this. So
lot
at
this
least,
summer, I guess.
yeah, I didn't check. That's a so tomorrow's game is actually, what is it, Tuesday? Wednesday's actually gonna be a night game now, I believe. Oh no, they're playing
Yeah.
Thursday. Sorry. Wednesday's gonna be the 8:40 at 9:40, and then they're playing Thursday as well. So they don't get the off day, but they're only going to Arizona, they're not flying back home. So like
So the
Colorado to
Rockies must have
Arizona.
had an off day in their schedule that day as well, then I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what Colorado's going. Who cares? It's Colorado.
They have
But
well, even a three-game series in Arizona where you only have one of them that's actually a late game, that's not too bad. And you know
yeah.
what? Actually, now
And
that I
that's the
think about
game,
it,
that's the arrival day, so it's great.
yeah.
Yeah.
And I have a gig that night from 6 to 9, so 9:40 means
Perfect.
around the time I'm driving home will be when the time the game is starting. So that'll
Yeah,
actually work
and then all of a sudden we got Detroit and the Yankees in the Subway Series, which, you know, lost its luster, and the Yankees, screw them, but
Yeah.
Oh, that's the actual the City Field one, but yeah,
Yeah, I
and
haven't paid
you
any mind to the Yankees this year. I couldn't even tell you. I'm
know, they
assuming they're
started a
having
little
a
slow, but
better year than that.
they've been on a bit of a heater. But okay, they'll go a little slump. Screw them, they suck.
Hopefully, they slump right around the time they get to
Yeah,
Queens.
it's a perfect time for the Mets to catch up, and yeah.
I agree.
Again, they just gotta win games. It really doesn't matter who they're playing. They just have to start winning more games than they're losing and start building a
They
get
do.
back to 500. Then what you just want, I think, as I was saying before, like really the first interleague, well, the
They've made
Atlanta and
very little
Philadelphia,
divisional games so far. Yeah.
right? And we don't care about the Marlins or Washington. So Friday, June 12th is the first game against Atlanta. And really, you just want to be like clicking when you play,
Yeah.
because like it makes if you can win these games against Atlanta and Philly, and you get right back into it,
Yeah.
like the projections and everything, whatever pace you're on. If you win more games against the teams that you need to beat to get ahead, like all of a sudden everything shrinks, your playoff odds all go up, and you're like, okay, we're back in this. We're beating the teams we need to beat. Like,
It's the
so
first week
yeah,
of May.
that's
There's a ton of time. I'm with you. I'm optimistic.
yeah. There's a lot of
We're gonna
teams we
think the
got
things
to.
they're gonna just keep taking two out of three and claw their way back into this, and it'll just be a
That's it.
slow start. And they'll get Lindor back, and then more of these guys will start to click. And I don't. I would love to see the opening day lineup get Polanco back out there and
Yeah,
get Luis
get all those
Robert
guys
back
back.
out there and get some of these guys back to action and go from there.
Yeah, that's just it. Like, once you start getting these guys back, it'll click. I mean, Bichette will start hitting, like we said. Like, he's starting to get there, and he'll come back. And then all these guys will just join him. He'll be clicking, and then all of a sudden you're adding, Luis. I don't know who's going to come back first, Robert, Polanco, or whatever. But like, these guys will join the thing. They'll start hitting, and all of a sudden, like, wait a minute, Beatty's only playing every other day, and every time he walks in, he's crushing the ball now because we're surgically inserting him into the best situations rather than just shoving him wherever he needs to
And
go.
just leaving him
I
out
think
there when you've
Beatty
got
will
no
have a good
better
second half
options.
too. I don't know what it is. And Vientos, they just need to play him more. I don't get it. I was
He
saying
needs
this
to be in the lineup every single day.
I was saying this on Blue Sky the other day. I don't understand why Marcus Semien, and again, I know I'm harping on Marcus Semien, but it's very clear that he's not hitting, right? Like, I'm not making that up. He shouldn't have the third most at bats or the second most or what, plate appearances every week. He's just
What's his
continue playing him
current?
every
You've got
single
the
day.
stats up there. I'm looking for him. I don't see him. You haven't scrolled down far enough
Because
to
he's
see
all the
who
way at the
he is there.
bottom. Here, I'll sort by plate appearances for
There you
you. He's
go.
third
Oh.
behind Soto and Bichette.
And he's batting
And yeah.
160, and he's
He's
boy.
just yeah. He's just not doing anything. This is the last seven. But like,
Oh, okay, that's not the whole season. It's still pretty
no.
bad,
But it's the
though.
same thing for the whole season. I think he has the most for the
Yeah,
season. But like, okay, Beatty's not hitting, but Vientos is hitting. Vientos has 20 plate appearances. He's only appeared at five games. Semien, just get Vientos in there. Play him DH. Put Beatty at
it's
second
the
base.
bad
Let
thing,
Vientos
right?
play first.
They got him in there for his gloves.
Yeah, but his glove isn't good too. His defense numbers are down too.
They're not
Like,
great. He doesn't look like, I mean, he doesn't look bad. He doesn't look like a gold
no, he
glover.
doesn't
He's
look terrible, but it's
he
not
looks
like
in
he's like
between.
it's like he's diving into the hole and saving like doubles from getting
No.
through. Let it sit him once a week. Just sit him once a week, and is that too much to ask?
You're
He's not
banging.
hitting
You're gonna bang this drum every time we podcast
until they
this
release
entire
him.
year
Yep.
until he's not on the team anymore. I'm making a prediction now. You're
Shove
the
Austin Slater in
anti-fan.
there. I don't care.
You're the anti-fan.
I guess I just like Nimmo. I thought he was a good
Yeah.
player, and I'm kind of
No, we had
upset they didn't
25
trade him. But
homers, drove in 90 runs last year, and
yeah,
you traded him away for a guy hitting 160. I don't. That's an easy reason for anybody who's a Mets fan to get jacked up about it. I agree. I thought they were very optimistic to think that he has done nothing at the plate for 2 years, coming at least 2 years coming
yeah,
into this year. So it's not like he was just cold for 2 months in August, July, September
yeah. I
last year.
don't,
He's been bad for a couple of years. So if he's not going to be a gold glover, then he's just a flaming hole in your lineup. So, but. Who is your alternative at second base? Who do you play there?
You play Beatty there, and you play
Play
Vientos
Beatty
at
there?
first, and you just rotate. I feel like they should play Alvarez at DH more often. But again, I'm not
Well,
asking. Like,
yesterday
obviously,
they had Alvarez
right?
and, well, I don't forget which one of them was DHing, but they were both in the lineup and they had doubles in the same inning to play to run,
Yeah.
and that was a pretty sweet thing. I think
Yeah, right.
yesterday
I like,
Alvarez
understand the
was.
roster. Yeah, we got injuries and stuff. You're not gonna bench Marcus Semien, but you could sit him one day, just sit him one more day a week, and just one day a week, period, and put Beatty at second, put Vientos at
I'm just
first,
saying,
DH.
Don't send him any.
Melendez.
Don't send him any. Don't send Semien any suspicious mail because you want him out of the lineup. Don't overextend yourself here, Mike. That's all I'm saying. And don't go too far on the other direction. Okay.
Yeah, I would like Tyrone Taylor hit too. Like he's at least like I feel like he has stretches, and the same for the last couple of years. Like Tyrone Taylor has stretches where he's actually kind of pretty brilliant, and then he just disappears and doesn't hit for like a month. So
like this past week.
Yeah, like this past week where he has nothing. Though still better than Semien somehow. But at least he plays defense. Tyrone Taylor is still a good defender, although here these numbers are not paying them, but I'm not worrying about 1 week defensive numbers. But
there's
like,
a lot of frowny face numbers. It's amazing that they've won three out of their last four, honestly. There's a lot of
looking at these numbers, yeah. If I sort by like actual hitting. Well, I guess I've got a couple of Bench, Slater. Slater's got nothing, that doesn't count. Melendez, Soto, Vientos. I guess it's just enough. It's just enough. Bichette's been sort of okay, and then yeah.
Yeah, he's had a couple of clutch appearances where he was able to bring a run in with two outs and things like that. But yeah, it's really those five guys at the top that you just had there on that list, not counting.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, we had that big loss to Washington, but they've let 0-5, 3-4, 1-2. So it's been pitching more than that. They just sort of squeaked, you know, squeaked it out with
them. I didn't watch a single pitch of that 14-2 shellacking they took, but we were out somewhere. I don't remember. It was a Saturday night, if I remember right. We were out doing something. It was a Wednesday. Oh, that's what it was.
14-2 was Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, so I do trivia on Wednesday with my wife and her friends. We were out at trivia, and I was like, well, you know, they have a bunch of big TVs. They all had hockey and basketball. And I'm like, damn, this place, they don't even. And then I was like, and you know, you're not supposed to look at your phone during trivia. And so then between rounds, I'm like, all right, I'm going to check the score. It wasn't 14-2, but they were down at that point. I think maybe it was 9-1 or 9-2. And I didn't even check it the whole rest of the night. I'm like, nope, they're toast. I'll look tomorrow. I'm not even.
Yeah, you don't
check
to,
when I get home. I just came home and went to bed.
Check out.
There's no point in looking to see. They're not coming back. Not this team. Not
I'll stick to. I have so much softball games now, so I'll stick to my softball games. I'll watch the third or fourth graders do what they do, and we actually made some great plays. We had a. This is funny. It's just a funny play all around, but it worked. Okay. So we had a ground. So there's runners on the bases, whatever they're running. So it's a hit to shortstop or third base or whatever it is. The fielder blocks it but doesn't catch it. So she blocks it, bounces, she picks it up, she throws it to first, way too late. But the first baseman smartly came off the bag to catch it. She drops it too, drops the ball, picks it up. And at this point, the runner's running around the bases, the runner on second is going home. So she throws it home, the catcher drops it, but picks it up and manages to tag the runner just in time to feel the umpire call him. So it was, everybody dropped like, it, but we had a nice, it was a nice heads up play all around and we got the out. So I'm like, hey.
Just like you drew it up, just like you practiced.
Just like you drew it up. High fives all around.
It's fantastic. It's
fine. I don't know if it makes me appreciate the Mets more or less to be so involved with you, Steve Softball. But like,
an out's an out, and you mark it in a book and call it and go on to the next inning. No, I think being a Met fan would give you a special appreciation for it. We will take it because it's an out and it gets them off the field. Let's go on to the next inning.
Our 56 Gators had a 10-9 walk-off win last night. So, you know, that was a rush. That was fun.
Very nice.
Yeah, so I think we're out of time now. So, thanks for listening, everybody. Rate and review our podcast. Give us 5 stars on all the platforms everywhere. Scribble it on the wall, everything. Tell everybody your friends. And let's go Mets.
And let's go beer.